Nice to see so many of you here. What to speak of the Menon family look like? Off the charts. Nice. So over the next few days, at least the beginning parts of a chapter from Third Canto Srimad Bhagavatam will be our topic. Kind of a foreboding title, Adverse Fruit of Activities. So I think what I'd like to do mainly today is a background and a preparation for entering into the subject, and then just putting our toe in the water, a little touching on the topic. So, is there anybody here who is unfamiliar? If you had a quiz question on your Bhakti Shastri exam, who was Lord Kapila? Is anyone here that wouldn't be able to answer that question? Who was Lord Kapila? Who is Lord Kapila? You all have an idea. Okay, good. This section of the Bhagavatam is Lord Kapila's teachings. The time frame is very early in Satya Yuga, the first of the four yugas, where dhyayate, the process of meditation, is the recommended means of achieving spiritual perfection. So certainly within Kapila Dev's teachings, there's a process of meditation. But we shouldn't mistake that idea of a process of meditation to mean it's something other than devotional service. It's an aspect of devotional service that's especially important, like manmanao, bhava mad bhakto. So I just want to begin with this, a few points that's kind of setting the picture properly. While meditation is the Satya Yuga process, in all the yugas, devotional service is the essence. Devotional service, devotional service, devotional service, devotional service, and then repeat, devotional service, devotional. So bhakti is maybe manifest in a prominent way in Satya Yuga via a process of meditation, but it means of entrance into the full-on devotional service as we know. So, Kapila Dev appeared as the son of Devahuti and Kardama Muni. Devahuti was one of the daughters of the first Manu. Manu number one is Swayambhuva Manu. And she was the eldest of three daughters. Devahuti was given the opportunity to select her husband, and the husband that she selected was a perfect person, a pure devotee who had already, even before they were married, he had already pleased Lord Vishnu so much by his devotion and his meditation that Lord Vishnu came before him. And they had a conversation. That's the qualification of her husband. Kardama Muni. Pure in his devotion. And many other elevated qualifications also. Full of in mystic powers. A great mystic yogi. And exemplary in his duties of varna and ashram, exemplary, perfect example. So, before they married, when Swayambhuva Manu came into the forest where Karvamuni was practicing his activities of devotion. Literally, just 2 days after Lord Vishnu had come to see Karvamuni, where Lord Vishnu said, in 2 days, Swayambhuva Manu is going to come here. And he's going to make a marriage proposal that you marry his daughter. You should say yes. It was really easy. Sometimes it's not so easy. Just say yes. And you'll have, as a son, because I know your heart's desire, you desire to have me as your son. So I'll become your son. She'll become the mother, your wife. And so many other things. So that marriage was performed. They continued to live in the forest. He doing what he was doing before she came. She was assisting him. And for tens of thousands of years, this went on. And then he recognized and honored her desire, as was also his desire, that they would have children. And so in order for that to take place, with his mystic power, he manifested a flying city with big mansions and big parks and large trees and wide avenues, and zoom, zoom, off they went. And 9 daughters were born, and 1 son was in the womb of Devahuti. Lord Brahma came, because Lord Brahma is the direct father of Kardama Muni, and Devahuti was his granddaughter, because his direct son was Swayambhuva Manu, and his daughter was Devahuti. So he came, he congratulated them, he indicated his desire, he did a little matchmaking, and said that the 9 daughters, they should marry different sages to help fill up the universe with good praja, good living entities. And then within the womb, he pronounced, Devahuti heard, within the womb of Devahuti is a personality, a form of the personality of Godhead. He will come and he will liberate her. He'll bring her to the stage of perfection. So, she already knew before the child was born what would happen. All these things were foretold by, first by Lord Vishnu, then by Lord Brahma. Then, the daughters were given in marriage, the son was born, the son grew up. Kapila Dev became of age to take care of his mother. One of the agreements, the pre-marriage agreement between Kardama Muni and Lord Brahma, was that when there is a son of age to care for your daughter, then I will leave home and take Vanaprastha stage of life. So that's Vedic. And that's what happened. So now here's Devahuti feeling intense separation from her husband, who she had been faithfully serving for tens of thousands of years, is gone. Imagine, just, he didn't die, he just left. Went to the forest to continue his activities of devotion. So there she was with her son, asking her son, so that this large section spanning over 6 or 7 chapters and long chapters, very deep, profound philosophical discussion on the answer to Devahuti's questions, which were repeated in slightly different ways in the course of all those chapters. So her question was, how to become free from excessive attachment to family. And I understand that attachment, I understand the philosophy. I'm just paraphrasing. I'm not this body. I know. I'm not this body. But I've been in association with my husband for so long, I'm attached. And because I'm attached, I'm suffering. I'm miserable. My mind is reeling. I can't think straight. And I know it's the illusory energy. And I know the illusory energy is under your control. So as you permitted that illusory energy to cover me, please take it away. And so the whole section is how to relieve ourselves from, in standard Bhagavatam language, I and mine. Aham and mama. I and the extension of I, the material conception of I is mine. So that chapter is chapter 25. We're going to be discussing chapter 30. So in chapter 25, it's devotional service. And so there's many things, but the short of it is that devotional service is made possible through association with those who are carrying devotion in their heart, a sadhu. Very, very similar to the first chapter of what we've been discussing in Chicago on Madhurya Kundamani. Bhakti is the cause of bhakti. Those who are carrying bhakti within their heart can give bhakti to others. That's how you get it. So there's this devotional service and the principal importance of sadhu sangha. Well, who is a sadhu? How to associate with a sadhu? What are the qualities of a sadhu? What's the result of association with a sadhu? What do you experience? What symptoms are found? Like that. 25. Then 26, he goes back and touches on, in detail, Sankhya philosophy. So when we hear Kapila Dev, hear his name, we associate he's the teacher of Sankhya philosophy. So he teaches Sankhya philosophy. The whole array of material elements and how they fit together. The cause and effect of the material elements. At the end, super soul. The purpose of all of this is detachment. Very important. And in that state of detachment, then one can properly meditate on super soul. That's 26. Chapter 27. How to live your life that way, practically speaking. In the middle of chapter 27, Devahuti asks another very important question. It's a yeah, but question. Yeah, but the soul is so involved in matter. It's practically inextricable. So with this knowledge of matter, and we belong to the category of spirit, that's what Sankhya is. I get it, we belong to the... You know, I said this in chapter 25. I know the philosophy, but the soul is so involved in matter. There can be detachment from knowledge, but wait a while, what happens? We find ourselves back, you know, implicated in matter again. Because we're so involved in matter. Is it really possible for the soul to become relieved from its entanglement in matter? And guess what the answer is? Yes. And guess what the method is? Bhakti. And he goes through detailed explanation, like he did in chapter 26. But the short answer is, bhakti, knowledge has potency for detachment. Jnana, vairagya. Bhakti has potency for dissolving the material condition altogether. Not just vairagya. That later may bounce back into the position of, again, attachment. It's like unsteady to steady devotion. Unsteady, sometimes, sometimes not, sometimes, sometimes not, sometimes too much, sometimes not, and then occasionally, sometimes again. So that the not only steady but impeccable, no longer any material contact through bhakti has that potency. It can dissolve the false ego and so forth. 27. Kapila Dev further describes devotional service. In fact, understanding devotional service is the title of the chapter. And 29, so I'm going to go a little more slowly with chapter 29, because embedded in chapter 29 are a number of messages that are very important for understanding chapter 30, adverse fruit of activities. So the first 10 verses of chapter 29, it begins, I'm paraphrasing to keep it on the simple side. There's 45 verses in the chapter. The first 10 verses, Devahuti says, bhakti is transcendental. You've explained that. Is it possible that someone who is influenced by the modes of nature can be engaged in devotional service? Good question. It's relevant to us, isn't it? So the answer is yes. Bhakti is pure, but then there's the influence of the modes of nature upon the consciousness of the person while bhakti remains pure, because bhakti is pure. And then Kapila Dev describes devotional service influenced by ignorance, influenced by passion, influenced by goodness, and transcendental devotional service. So the transcendental devotional service is the next section. I'm doing this purposely because it connects with the next chapter. To have the proper regard for the next chapter, it's really important, if not essential, to understand 29's message. He uses, Kapila Dev uses this word, several terms, but they all mean the same thing, separatist. Separatist. Devotional service that's influenced by ignorance is the person is performing devotional service inspired by envy, pride, violence, anger, and a separatist. And separatist, the indication is, the Sanskrit word is bhinna drik. You know this word bhinna from Bhagavad Gita. Bina Prakritir Ashtada. Krishna has 8 separated energies: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. There's Bina, separated energies. So Bina Drik, one who sees separately. So there's having a separate interest from Krishna. There's Krishna's interest, and there's my interest. And my interest is I want to get back at somebody. Or I'm envious towards somebody, or one of the lower modes of nature. I have an interest separate from the Lord's interest, so I'm going to engage in devotional service because you'll help me achieve my separate interest. That's the indication of the mode of ignorance. And then the mode of passion, it's another term in Sanskrit, but it's the same meaning. Pratak bhava. We know what the term bhava means. The simple meaning is a feeling within the mind or a mood, a bhava. And we have our, in rasa topics, there's certain bhavas. But, you know, in a broader general sense, like Ishwara bhava, you've heard that term. people that have a mood of being a controller. Bhava, it's a state of mind. So this is pratak bhava, separate. Specific, he speaks of worship of the deity in the temple. By a separatist, what is the separatist mentality of one who's worshipping the deity in the temple? They have a motive for material enjoyment, fame, and opulence. Moved by passion, someone may worship a deity thinking, I'll get some honor and recognition for being this kind of a person, one that does this very nicely. And I'll be remunerated. Those of you that have been to Vrindavan and some of the temples, the devotees that are looking after the deities, they just see the deity as a means of getting money from people. Yes? The pandas. It's awful. So that's what's being described here. And again, the term, it's separatist. So here's what Prabhupada says in his purport, like four sentences. The word, quote, separatist must be understood carefully. I'll just say it again. This has bearing on chapter 30, if I'm going through it. This Sanskrit word, binadrik, and pratak bhava, that's passion and ignorance, these two terms. A separatist is one who sees his interest as separate from that of the Supreme Lord. Mixed devotees, or devotees in the modes of passion and ignorance, think that the interest of the Supreme Lord is supplying the orders of the devotees. Now, Prabhupada has said this. We should not see the Lord as an order supplier. But in passion and ignorance, that's what one does. So that's the separatist idea. The interest of such devotee is to draw from the Lord as much as possible for their sense gratification. This is the separatist mentality. Actually, pure devotion is explained in the previous chapter, 28. What's that? The mind of the Supreme Lord and the mind of the devotee should be dovetailed. A devotee should not wish to for anything but to execute the desire of the Supreme. You recall some discussion about the prayers of Prahlad after Lord Nrisimhadev says, I want to give you a benediction. Prahlad says, no. Let's take a look at what our relationship is. You're the master, and I'm the servant, and there's nothing else. There's not some vanic activity going on. I serve you, you give me something. No. So please don't ask. Please take something. Because that's not our relationship. Our relationship. So, and then he goes on to say, because in this world people are attached to fruitive activities, which is chapter 30, because people are attached to fruitive activities, you've sent me from the spiritual world to come here and teach by example, pure devotional service. And that's what pure devotional service is, which is, there's no separate interest. So, when the devotee has an interest or will different from the interest of the Supreme Lord, his mentality is that of a separatist. So, the topic is clear. Then he goes on to devotional service in goodness. Here's the description. When a devotee worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, remember the topic of chapter 30, adverse fruitive activities, they're fundamental elements to the separatist mentality. the interest separate from the Lord. So motive goodness, devotional service, is one wants to become freed from that separatist way of thinking, the mood and the spirit, the tuk bhava. Only one, the bhava, your desire shall be my desire. One who cultivates, I may not be there, but if I cultivate like that, that's devotional service and goodness. The purpose behind it. I'm not there yet, but I wish to become free from that influence. If I cultivate that, devotional service and goodness. And then when the worship of the deity, specifically it's mentioned, when the worship of the deity takes place, it's for the Lord's pleasure, for my purification. Period. There's no separate interest. So, going quickly now, a little, try to go quickly. The next section of verses, six verses, is describing this topmost devotional service. Again, references are made in several of the verses to fruitive activities, or activities in how one regards one's activities and the fruits of those activities. They're for the Supreme. My life is for the Supreme. Everything is for the Supreme. My mind is absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme while I'm doing whatever I'm doing. This is the stage of transcendental devotional service. The very next verse following this series is what happens when the hearing process takes place. When the hearing process, when you hear topics of Krishna, the mind just goes. We're not there yet. When we hear the chanting of the holy name, we have to keep bringing our mind again to the holy name, bring our mind again to the holy name, bring our mind again to the holy name, bring our... It's sadhana. And the elevated stage, the mind just goes. No effort needed, because the obstacles are removed. The obstacles are the modes of nature and their byproducts, like the I and mind, material I and mind conception. Separate interest becomes dissolved, and by the power of bhakti, and then this transcendental position is then found. So in that section, 11 through 15, there's a description of how such a devotee regards their work or their duties in life, how they regard deity worship, how they regard the spiritual master, how they regard instructions that come from the spiritual master. Their character is straightforward, not duplicitous, but straightforward in their dealings. And then an element starts to come in that becomes very important and further developed in the rest of the chapter, how they see others. And essentially, the message of how to see others is to see that within the heart of others is super soul. And Prabhupada goes into this lengthy description in a number of places that even within the tree, the bird, or the hog, or whatever species of life, super soul is there, so then there's how one regards those living entities, not according, you make distinctions according to, this is important, you make distinctions according to covering and according to the position according to the covering, but you don't identify, you making those distinctions, your behavior is appropriate, but still there's regard that super soul is within. Remember, this is Satya Yuga, and it's meditation, right? So, super soul, recognizing super soul within the heart of every living entity, very important, not only in Satya Yuga, presently, also, seeing God within the sacredness of every living entity, although the covering, he makes the point, when we see a tiger, we don't go and, you know, embrace the tiger. We behave in a different way with a tiger than with a friend. But we still have regard for the tiger because the super soul is within. So behaviors may be different, based on the covering, but we don't identify the individual or our regard for that other living entity according to the covering. It's, you know, sounds like, you know, just language, but it's not just language. It's how you live your life, how you regard God is going to help determine how you regard other living entities. That's the point. And conversely, one who is God conscious will have due respect for other living entities because of the presence of super soul within. And then a few more sections. I want to read, actually, starting with text 21. Those, some of you have your little devices around. So text 21. Kapila Dev says to Devahuti, I am present in every living entity as Supersoul. If someone neglects or disregards that Supersoul everywhere and engages himself in the worship of the deity in the temple, then that is simply imitation. So we're engaged in deity worship. It's part of our essential five most important activities in devotion. There's something else that we're supposed to do along with the deity worship. What's that? Recognize within living entities, the super soul is also there. The same Lord who we're worshiping in the deity form, in his Paramatma form, is within the heart of every living entity. And if that part is missed, if we're disrespecting or not properly respecting the fact that God exists within the heart of everyone, then that worship of the deity is imitation. It's not complete yet. We have to go a little further. I'll mention it again. I'm going through this to help us understand how to properly regard the topics of chapter 30. Respect is to go to all living entity. Even if you're engaged in this very nice activity, brahminical activity of deity worship, there must be proper regard for other living entities on the basis, not just a cultural thing, but a transcendental thing. Super soul is within. It's conducive for transcendental consciousness, and then one can get the actual fruit of the deity worship. Otherwise, this separatist spirit, pratak bhava, can spoil our access to Krishna through the very activity of devotion itself. Text 22. One who worships the deity of Godhead in the temples, but does not know that the Supreme Lord as Paramatma is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. Similar, just stating it in another language, a little stronger. Text 23. Again, here is this language of pratak darshanaha. Dina, or Pratak Darshanaha. One who offers me respect, but is envious to the bodies of others, and is therefore a separatist, never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. So he's offering me respect, you know, Madhyaji, Mam Namaskuru, that part is there, but disrespecting or not properly having regard for other living entities. It's essential to have proper regard for other living entities. there's a class that I've given several times because of some nice appreciation of the request made by Maharaj Parikshit. You know who is Maharaj Parikshit? Who is he? Maharaj Parikshit is panic-stricken. He's the king who heard from Shukadeva Goswami the Srimad Bhagavatam's message, right? And he was cursed to die by the bite of a snake bird by a young Brahmin boy who cursed him like that. So he gave up his kingdom, turned his kingdom over to his son, Janamejaya, and he prepared himself for death in 7 days. And he invited all the sages and saintly people of his whole kingdom, the whole world, to come and be present with him and to instruct him how to use this 7 days left. So when they came, he received them, and then he made some request. Please continue to speak, Vishnu, topics about the personality of Godhead. And then he asked, so this is, if I have to take birth again, please bless me with unalloyed devotion to the personality of Godhead, the association of devotees who will always hear and chant the topics of Krishna, and this, a friendly disposition towards all living entities. Because you're not going to have these two if you don't have that one. You may think, all I need is, you know, unalloyed devotion to Krishna and association of devotees. Everyone else can take a hike. No. Friendly regard for all living entities. And there's ways that friendly regard for all living entity can be displayed. Like distribute books to them, or hold festivals and invite them to participate, or go on Harinam Sankirtan, or something or something. We extend a friendly regard towards them, because that's the best friend. Someone who is your best friend. Someone who reminds you of Krishna. That's your best friend. In society, that's your best friend. They have that function. They're your real well-wisher and best friend. They remind you of Krishna. I'm right now thinking of a circumstance where somebody, a very good friend, was upset because something. And he, you know, called me to say, rah, 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 rah. And I said, you must have forgotten Krishna. And he laughed. That's your reaction to rah, 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 rah. I said, yeah, you forgot Krishna. Huh? How do you see a circumstance? And, you know, your relationship with Prabhupada and your service to Prabhupada and your service to Krishna. And, oh, okay. Yeah, but I guess I forgot Krishna. So we can have, and it was in relation to other living entities. And, you know, some feelings towards other living entities, this and that. So we mean that it doesn't mandate that we like behaviors, because that's chapter 30. There's a behavior that it's not nice. It's not favorable. We don't approve of it. It's not, you know, great. We still have respect and regard for those living entities that have super soul within their heart. However, if there's this misfortune of not having a proper understanding of the goal of life and how to achieve it, then by default it'll be over there in the fruitive activities. The part of all of this exercise of going through chapter 29 is to help us appreciate when we hear chapter 30, we shouldn't look down our nose and go, oh, those bad people. Or the other kind, it's like, oh, those poor people, let me help them. Not like that. Regard, it's that the misfortune of others is not something that should bring one happiness or a kind of smug or condescending attitude. That's not the Bhagavatam. And so if we understand 29 properly, it's to help us become free from those tendencies. Knowledge helps to, again, it's the knowledge that helps to lead to detachment. And in the chapter 26, along with all this, 27, along with all this discussion about how to live your life in such a manner that you can be able to meditate upon Supersoul, always, even in your practical activities, not like you're sitting on your in front of your computer screen at work, and you're in a yoga asana meditating on Supersoul instead of doing your work, or you're doing your homework, but you don't do your homework because you're meditating on Supersoul. So it's not like that. It's seeing the hand of or presence of the Supreme Lord within everything in this mood of detachment. So it says there, later on, details are going to be described of, that's the I conception, and then there's the mind conception, because fruitive activities lead to, or are to strengthen what's mine. I'm doing something because I want something. And I want something, that's the mode of passion, and then it's mine. And so it covers our ability to see Supersoul, ability to remember Krishna, our ability to manmana, bhava madbhakto. So it helps in the detachment department. We don't want to go there. And we have a tendency to go there. I mean, big time. Become a devotee. And then, if you're thoughtful, I'm sure most of you are thoughtful. When you're thoughtful, you'll recognize, even in devotional service, I have this fruitive mentality that I do something because I want something. It's just a sustain. And part of this is to help us become free from stain and become pure, so that we can become really happy. Because what we're going to hear is that it's this verse number 23 says you can't be happy. If you're not peaceful, how can you be happy? Be happy and your mind is agitated? Not possible. So, one who offers me respect, but is envious of the bodies, and that means, the broader sense is the upadis. What's upadis? Designations. I'm big, you're small, I'm this and you're that, and the gross or subtle designations, not the soul, but the designations of the soul. It's a major consideration philosophically and practically. So as long as we are relating to others, one another, on the platform of upadis, our mind's not going to be peaceful. We'll see as a separatist sees and not be peaceful. Here's 24. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, if a person is ignorant of my presence in all living entities, never pleases me by the worship of my deities in the temple. He's repeating the same point so that we'll understand it properly. 25. Performing his prescribed duties, one should worship the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until one realizes my presence in his own heart and in the hearts of other living entities as well. You see, there's a theme. It's advocating the mode of goodness to overcome the tendency of separatist mentality, engaging in devotional service to the degree of purification that one can actually see the Supreme Lord within oneself and within others likewise. Again, the separatist idea is in the next verse, 26. As the blazing fire of death, I cause great fear to whoever makes the least discrimination between himself and other living entities because of a differential outlook. Again, it's Benedrick. Vrinadrisha. It's being repeated for a good reason. For the goal is not becoming a monist. Everything is one. The goal is seeing the interest of the Supreme Lord. So while there's diversity here, we can see that diversity and act appropriately according to the diversity, but not forget, please, that super soul is within the heart of everyone. So respect, while different treatment is there, different conduct and behavior. We're almost done with chapter 29. So, there's a long section, starting with 28, with the varieties of living entities, from the lowest grade to the topmost grade. So there's discrimination. Lower, higher, 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 higher. You know, the highest, once again, is a pure devotee. And there's steps down from the pure devotee, down to, well, let's see what the... Here's 27. Therefore, through charitable gifts and attention, like where your mind goes and where your property goes, your possessions, giving in charity, as well as through friendly behavior, and by viewing all to be alike, one should propitiate me who abides in all creatures as their very self. It's not a monistic message, it's a devotional message of fair, equal, kind, compassionate treatment to all living entities, appropriate to their position. So now here comes this list. I'm not going to read the whole long list because it's too long. But it starts, living entities are superior to inanimate objects. Oh, Blessed Mother, among them, the living entities who display life symptoms are better. Animals with developed consciousness are better than them, and better still are those who have developed sense perception. Then it goes on and on and on. So there are grades of living entities. But in all of the prior messages, within all those living entities, please see that Supersoul is there. And then at the end, text 32, is those who are pure devotees who execute devotional service without expectation of reward. Again, this is without fruit of intention, detached from fruit of activities. Small thing, major thing. Therefore, I do not find a greater person than he who has no interest outside of mine, not a separatist, and who therefore engages and dedicates all his activities and all his life, everything, unto me without cessation. So that what supports pure devotional service is the conscious, these two things. Krishna is within everything, and everything belongs to him, so everything becomes offered to him. And that then one can do like that without cessation. Those of you that have studied Sri Isha Upanishad, same idea. Same idea. The early verses. Such a perfect devotee offers respect to every living entity. Notice, it's such a theme. Because we're going to go to now text chapter 30 where it speaks about fruitive activities, and you go, ooh. You may not have proper respect for those persons. If you've read carefully and understood 29, that mistake won't happen. But it's something that we should be wary of for ourselves. And out of compassion, those that may be stuck in that position of fruitive activities and the adversity of fruitive activities, have compassion and offer transcendental knowledge, the alternative. Such a perfect devotee offers respects to every living entity because he is under the firm conviction that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has entered the body of every living entity as the super soul. And then he brings in the concept of time, because super soul here is this Purusha, whom the individual soul must approach, is the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the transcendental chief personality, and his activities are all spiritual. The time factor, who causes the transformation of the various material manifestations, is another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone who does not know that time is the same Supreme Person is afraid of the time factor. And there's a whole series of the demigods move on fear of the time, the sun moves in fear of the time, and, you know, fear is the consequence of not having proper understanding of the Supreme. It's not, it's unfortunate. This is, it's connected to the adverse fruit of activities chapter. Because there's fear in fruitive activities. All those expectation. I want happiness. And something else happens. And I know that something else is going to happen, because it always happens. I have some fear. But I still have an expectation. And I'm stuck. So this is the philosophical background of the position, the Kapila Dev's teachings on the process of meditation, fixing the mind on super soul. It must be practical, not just theoretical. We need to see, and not like necessarily with these eyes, but see with knowledge. Super soul as we're situated is supporting and the basis of everything. And now this time energy. So time brings things into being. Time sustains things. Time withdraws things. Ultimately, time destroys everything. It brings everything into being and destroys everything, just as Super Soul does, just as Lord Vishnu does. It's his time energy, and it's him. One who is not connected to him is fearful. Whatever I have is going to be taken. And we're going, I'm going on too long. That's how chapter 30 begins. The first three verses that I was thinking would cover, it looks like they don't have time to cover. Everything that's sought after through fruitive activities is temporary. We'll hear it tomorrow. It's temporary. So that connects with chapter 29. Here's the time energy. Super soul is within. He's the time energy. Those that don't understand it, they're driven by fear. And then verse after verse is describing those who are situated in fear because of him. Fear rules their lives. But then, so that will go to the last verse, text 45. Well, read 44. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of God, of the directing demigods in charge of the modes of material nature, carry out the functions of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Everything animate and inanimate within this material world is under their control, and they move out of fear. Then the last verse of the chapter 29. The eternal time factor has no beginning and end. It is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Time energy. The maker of the criminal world. It, the time factor, brings about the end of this phenomenal world. It carries on the work of creation by bringing one individual into existence from another. And likewise, it dissolves the universe by destroying even the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. End of the chapter. So 29 is further descriptions of the process of devotional service, and it's ending here with this: if you're Krishna conscious, time energy works one way. If you're not Krishna consciousness, time energy works another way, and it causes fear. And everything is taken. You're chasing after everything that you require time to have it manifest, and time takes it away. Just because you forgot Krishna. And you're not moving the soul that's journeying without Krishna consciousness, without the principle of devotional service in their life. So now we're ready for chapter 30, adverse fruit of activities. Because, so it's, one more time, it's to help detachment so that we can, in that mood of detachment, get a stronger foothold in bhakti. But bhakti isn't dependent upon that. It's just, it's an assist. And one who doesn't heed the message of adverse fruit of activities will experience the hard way. You know that statement that's found in Prabhupada's teachings: there's first class, second class, third class, and fourth class intelligence. Do you know what they are? First class intelligence is just by hearing. One can understand. Brahmana, just by hearing. Second class intelligence: one hears, one doesn't understand. But one sees in others, then they can understand. Oh. And third class intelligence: they hear, they don't understand. They see, they don't understand. They experience, oh, now I understand. And fourth class intelligence is they don't understand even after they experience. Continue stubbornly like a donkey going after the carrot, fruit of activities. And so chapter 30 is to help us understand the futility of continuing to be a donkey, continuing to move in the human form of life, pursuing things that are antavattu palam tesham, limited and temporary. The pala is limited and temporary. And it's not wise. Wise people don't do that. So it's to help us become wise or learned about the nature of that. I was thinking of this in preparing. It's like the liquid beauty story. Everyone know the liquid beauty story? You know? No. There was a man who was going to a prostitute. And he was very attached, addicted to the enjoyments with the prostitute. So, to teach the fellow a lesson, she decided she would take very strong purgatives and laxatives, and so she passed all kinds of stool and bad smelly things and kept it in a bucket. And then the guy came to see the prostitute and said, "What happened to you?" "I lost all my beauty. I stored it in a bucket." "Oh, let me see the beauty that's in the bucket." He saw what was in the bucket. He smelled and said, "But that's my beauty, liquid beauty." So the covering may look very nice, but, you know, in words to induce detachment, Prabhupada would say, what is this body? Pus and blood and stool and urine. Rukmini says the same thing in relation to Krishna. Who would be interested in somebody with hair and mustaches and blood and pus and urine? And I want one who has a spiritual form, Krishna. Nonetheless, our attraction for the temporary is very strong. So to assist, knowledge has, again, according to Kapila Dev's teachings, knowledge has a potency. Detachment. Bhakti has greater potency. Finishes material existence. The even The tendency to become attracted to, it's far more than knowledge. Tendency. But it's a, so chapter 30 is a knowledge. And, and guess what the conclusion is going to be? Take devotional service. Don't go down the path of fruitive activities. Don't go that direction. Go that direction. And here's some of the reasons why. And let us not forget, when we see those tendencies in ourselves or in others, we shouldn't be judgmental and disrespectful. We should be respectful towards ourselves and to others, and warn ourselves and warn others, that's not the best, it's not a wise path to move on. Readjust, please. Reset your compass and go towards bhakti. Here's why. That's this wonderful section. And again, it's going back to her question. How can I become free from this inordinate attachment? Although I know the philosophy. Doesn't it sound like a familiar question that a sincere devotee will ask themselves? It's very valuable, very practical, this question, this whole section of the Bhagavatam. So any comments or questions? I've gone on for quite a while. Yes.
Thank you for the wonderful class, Maharaj. I had a couple of questions. One is, in the whole chapter we are hearing, and even in Nectar of Instructions we heard Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari, how we should respect them in their, according to their positions.
Yes.
But now the question here is when we see the Uttama Adhikari, our tendency is that we will very, very respectful and careful. But when we see a Kanishta Adhikari, the lenience tendency are very irrespectful, not even the minimum respect that should be given. When I see such kind of behavior with some devotees, how should I react for that? I understand I should not be judgmental towards them.
Yay.
But immediately it comes to the mind and it kind of taps again and again. That's that one question. And the second question is same related to that is, we are in process, we are learning, not fully knowledgeable, so there is not fully detachment. Neither the bhakti is in such a high stage where we can see everybody in a, super soul. We understand there is levels, but still, as soon as we see an outside person, the moment we see a person, it's like material cap comes in. Okay, this is the person, he's like this. Because of the dealings, it's influenced by their dealings. So how can we really go into their, treat them with a super soul level in a practical way?
Okay. That's discussed in chapter 27. A short answer is not what you're looking for, but the short answer is there's no substitute for Krishna consciousness to do that. It requires Krishna consciousness to do that. And the preface of your question was, we don't have that yet. So we can't do that yet. We can strive like that. We shouldn't pretend that we're something that we're not. That doesn't mean, oh, it's okay, I can start criticizing and complaining about them. Well, at least in my mind, it's okay. It's not, we check that tendency because, and on the strength of the instruction to do so and the strength of wishing to cultivate higher quality bhakti. So it's like the mode of goodness, cultivation, exactly what's in chapter 29. Replace the energy that's going in those other directions, redirect it. intelligence and with whatever strength of devotion we have. The intelligence is the instruction to do so. That's our intelligence, following that intelligence and with whatever devotion we have, to whatever devotion we have to Guru and Krishna, that will propel it, that will carry the intelligence in the right direction. So it's that take that energy and just redirect it. And just keep practicing it. And keep practicing it, and keep practicing it. That's the regulation of practice carries us to, that becomes our nature instead. It displaces the lower modes, influence, and the cultivation of the higher mode of goodness. For purification. And let me do this for purification. Not because I'm already there, it's spontaneous for me. Out of purification. I wish to become purified. So then we practice, we cultivate like that. Now, you said two questions, I forgot the first one. If we see a Kanishna and we feel something that's not nice, how do we deal with that feeling, this not nice feeling? Well, again, the transcendental response is it won't be possible to do consistently without devotion. But if you may have heard Radhanath Maharaj's class that Sunday morning when he gave class, the emphasis he was making was upon compassion. Seeing others that are not in an elevated condition with compassion. And if one sees them with compassion, then there's the opportunity to elevate that person. But compassion doesn't mean I'm up here, there, down there. Compassion means compassion. Here's a soul that's entangled. And with compassion, what can be done? Exactly, our meditation can be the compassion of our founder, Acharya. You know that wonderful prayer in the Boston Harbor? He saw, he knew, how are they going to understand this message? Filled with ignorance and passion, this is Shuddhasattva message. How is it going to? So depending upon Krishna. So the compassion and depending upon Krishna. And, you know, that's a tall order when we're conditioned souls. Our conditioned soul tendency is quickly size somebody up and put them in a category. We're judgmental. We're judgmental about ourselves and about others. So we get to let go of that pattern, that tendency. Look to the great souls, the mercy that we're receiving in our life, and then we can become like them. That's the alternative or the substitute. Inspired by the compassion of those who are our inspiration in life, we don't imitate, but we emulate. So what would it be like if I saw Kanishna and didn't, put them in a box in my mind, but, with compassion? It happened in class just this morning, in the Bhagavatam class. I'm looking at it. Some family came in right in the middle of class, like we weren't even in the temple room, carrying on conversation, blah, 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 and rattling their bags to put stuff on the altar to make an offering to the deity, like we weren't even there. It's Kanishna. And some of the brahmacharis chuckled, and somebody softly went over and spoke to them. An etiquette item that's kind of obvious, but somehow they were oblivious. But, they were, then they quieted down and went about their business in the middle of class. So it's with compassion. And through association with devotees, if they're spoken to kindly, compassionately, caringly, there's more of a chance they'll go beyond that kind of behavior and come to the Madhyama behavior than if we just, you know, judge them and put them in a box in our mind. It's a mode of service with compassion. And that principle of mode of service with compassion goes across the board. Okay? Someone else? In front?
In process of to learn respect, in process of learning to respect all living entity, I'm thinking in conflict between devotees when something happened. So we try to cultivate respect internally,
yes.
But should we do try to understand underneath their need, like it can be love or respect? Should we try to give them what they need?
Well, especially if you can do the second part, amanina manadena. You know what that one means. You don't have any expectation of respect in return. Fruitive is, I offer respect and I have an expectation. I'm expecting respect in return. And if that respect in return doesn't come, then we have a meltdown. I mean, not commonly. We, you know, we lose our capacity to be respectful. In other words, it was a good try, but it wasn't deep enough. If you go, you know, to the soul and super soul platform, because intrinsically there is some worth and some value and something worthy of respect, even if, you know, you fill in the blank, even if. One of the favorite appreciations of Krishna, my mind's going blank. Who's the author of Dasavatar Stotra? Jayadev Goswami. You know that circumstance where Jayadev Goswami was chopped up by some dacoits? You know the story? Yes? I'll say it. He was a worshiper of deities that he loved very much and they loved him very much. And one time he wanted to have a festival for them. He's a brahmana, didn't have wealth, lived very simply. So he decided he would go out and make presentations on his writings, and whatever would come, people would donate, he would use that for his deity. It wasn't for himself, it was for his deity. So on his way back, after some traveling, some days, some period of time, he had some wealth, he had some money, and some dacoits chopped him, tied him up and took his money and threw him in a well. And one day a king was coming by something like this, and went to get water and saw there was a body and pulled him out of the well and asked him how this happened, and he described what had happened. He brought him to his palace and he heard him speaking and singing his Gita Govinda, and it was, wow, you know, he's not an ordinary person. He got ambushed. He is a saint. And his wife was brought, and a palanquin in procession, and they had a big festival in honor of Jayadev. So Jayadev noticed in the audience were the three dacoits. Only they were dressed as brahmanas so they could get some money as dakshin for the brahmanas. And he called over one of the king's assistants and spoke something. So they thought jigs up, he recognizes us, we're going to get captured and punished. So they ran. What Jayadeva had said to the guards was that make sure these three brahmanas get some special remuneration. That was what he had said. So when they fled, the guards pursued them. And the guards caught up to them. And then they said to the guards, oh, that person, Jayadeva, he's bad, something, 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 something. Forget. He did something really bad and said what the something he did really bad. The earth opened up and swallowed them and they disappeared. The guards were shocked. And they went back and told the king. So the king asked Jayadeva, do you know what just happened? Do you know who those people are? He said, yes, I know who those people are. They're the ones that chopped me up and tied me up and threw me in the bottom of the well. He said, well, why is it that you were asking that they should be given some special remuneration if you knew who they were and what they had done, instead of asking for them to be punished? He said, well, they were in so much need that they did this thing and they did this other thing, so they must be in a desperate situation, so we should show some kindness to them. The king was amazed. He said, you're not just Gita Govinda wonderful, your character is wonderful. And so one goes with the other, which is the message here. It's not easy. Similar to the prior question. It's not cosmetic. You can't just paint it on and now I'm compassionate. I'm forgiving and I can see others with respect, even if they don't give respect to me, no problem. But it's something that we should understand. That's the character, that's what Lord Chaitanya says is necessary for Kirtaniya Sadahari, chanting where there's actually some attraction and some taste. We're not there. And so we struggle with our chanting. But we continue chanting, just like this other description about worshipping the deity. You continue worshipping the deity until that time comes, however long it is, until we can see super soul within and within other living entities. So that we take the means for purification with the mood of seeking purity. That's mode of goodness. We're not there yet. But seeking purity through those, dissolving the false ego, dissolving the material mind, hearing, worshipping, chanting with faith and with the proper sankalpa, intention, gradually. It's a lifetime's work. But, it's something worth working for. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful lecture. My question is actually on the same lines as what Sumangali Mataji asked, maybe a bit converse of it. For me, it's especially when it comes to interaction with devotees, since there is a common interest of Krishna, I feel more connected to them, trying to give respect. But at the same time, I was actually remember hearing that it's important to discriminate among devotees. So for me, it's not natural, so I was just trying to understand.
What's not natural?
Trying to discriminate among devotees.
Well, it depends what you mean by discriminate. Discriminate can have negative, it can have positive connotation. Now back to this question of respect. In one of the purports that I didn't read, you want to take the microphone from here? In one of the purports that I didn't read, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is quoted, specifically in those two separatist, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. He says, Vishwanath says, that one should respect such devotee because they're devotee. But one may discriminate or select to not intimately associate with a person whose interest is separate from the Lord's interest. Although they're worshiping the Lord because they may have this or that motive nature driving them. So we respect them. Worshiping the Lord. And we intimately associate, you know, with others who have, at least they wish to become free from that separate interest of the Lord. So we're discriminating of who we intimately associate with because we take on qualities like those with whom we associate. So now, let's say in the workplace, you're packed up in your workspace with a whole bunch of other people that aren't even devotees at all. So now, what are you supposed to do? You turn them off? You be friendly, but how do you be friendly? You carry bhakti and you act as a bhakta would act. It means what you eat and what you say and, you know, what you do and your mood and your understanding of the person who you're serving and all those things. You be the example of that for them. You have to sit down every lunch hour and give them a Bhagavad Gita verse to study. There may be somebody in the workplace that is interested like this, so you can do that. Anyway, but we discriminate. And then amongst the non-devotees and the devotees, because that's, we're madhyamas. We're striving to become qualified madhyamas. We're enjoined to do those things. So you're saying it's not natural for you. And, you know, to be trusting is good. And being respectful is good. And the different ways in which we show trust and respect is part of becoming a madhyama. Unless you just happen to be an uttama. Maybe you are. No, okay. Then you strive to be an uttama, a madhyama. And as you say, it's not natural for you, but, you know, hear the instructions and cultivate the instructions. The children are restless. I think it's time to end. Any last question? Back there. Okay. Last question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for the wonderful class. Maharaj, I was looking at that last verse. With my little intelligence, I was not able to understand the meaning of, internal meaning of this verse.
Which one?
The last verse, 3:20.
Oh, you don't understand the verse or the word? The verse.
In the verse, the last word. It says the time is going to devour even, or destroy even Yamaraj, who is a Mahajan and a pure devotee. So I was wondering if time destroys a pure devotee, what is the, where
easy.
We are?
It's real easy. Put the microphone down. The soul is not destroyed. The bhakti of that soul is not destroyed. The post that is occupied by that soul is taken away, and with that the body and, you know, the whole cosmic manifestation is destroyed. At the end of the cosmic manifestation, there are different destinations of Lord Brahma. He's one also of the Mahajans. Commonly he goes back to Godhead. But his body is destroyed, the post is destroyed, the abode is destroyed, the whole thing is destroyed. That's the meaning. Devotion carries forward, but the temporal aspects are removed by the influence of time. Even the Lord of Death, even Lord Brahma, even anything of this world, time is not discriminated. Time takes away. Is that all right?
All right, that is a wonderful.
But
one more small question. Sorry.
But, okay.
So, in the previous verses, it says everything is out of fear of God. It's happening. So, I was wondering if you are a devotee, we should do it with love towards that, then how the fear comes there?
It doesn't. If you become a pure devotee, fear's gone. If you're not a pure devotee, there's fear. Oh. Are you a pure devotee? Would you like to become a pure devotee? And when that pure devotee comes, there's no more fear. Now somebody may say, you know, they have decals on the back of macho trucks. No fear. Right? It's a bluff. It's a bluff. Is that all right? As long as there's a mix, there'll be a fear. No mix, no fear. That's the message. Fear is something that is mine, at least I think it's mine, it's going to be taken away. So it's the fear of loss of the temporary.
So all these demigods and everybody is out of fear only they are working for God.
Not out of fear only. There, some statements may be like that, out of fear, but it's not, you know, demigods are not out of fear only. Okay?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. That's it. See the Prabhupada key? Right.